Welcome back to the Ride and Laugh podcast. If you love mountain biking, you are in the right place. Picture your last group ride. You had a ton of fun. You're back at the lot. Everyone's talking, hanging out. The stoke is high. You're talking about bikes, tech, nutrition, fitness. That's what we do here each week on the Ride and Laugh podcast. Let's drop in. Sage, how are you today?
Man, it has been a rough week for weather on the East Coast. A lot of rain, which kind of affects, you know, the whole fitness game, which I know we're going to get into later. But man, yeah, the rain really, not a fan.
Yeah, the rain definitely has been a bummer. And we are going to get into the fitness. This is going to be the fitness pod. So we're going to dive into that. It's really kind of a primer, like nutrition. This is kind of a primer. There's so much to talk about in fitness.
So much.
We're going to start touching on a couple different topics and talk about what works for us and get some listener feedback and rider feedback on what works for other people and share some ideas and all become stronger and faster and have more fun on the trails. That's the idea.
Yes.
But before we do that, we want to give some gratitude to our listeners. We have some excellent feedback on our last episode, which was on riding skinnies, which really was, you know, I think brought up a lot of emotion in people. People either love them or hate them. I would say mostly hate them.
No.
I think because of frustration reasons. You know, a lot of the comments were just like, I really struggle with this. You can very easily put a belief in your mind that I'm not good at this. I'm not good at riding skinnies. And I've had that belief in the past. And so much of how we do on the trail and then how we do in life is based on our belief structure. If we really believe that we're good at something, right? That's what we say. You got this, right? All of our words of affirmation, you got this. And the visualization, seeing yourself doing it, seeing yourself succeed. And so I think when people see skinnies, they get that nervousness. I know I do, especially the higher off the ground it gets. And you fail a couple times, maybe you fall on a couple and you're just like, I'm going to do everything else on the trail. I'm just not going to do that. And you start to think, I'm just not that good at these. And so you start building this belief system around it and it's false. Because we can be good at everything. We can be good at whatever we want to be good at. We just need to believe it and visualize it, see it happening, feel it happening, get that feeling of being comfortable in the air on something skinny and get that feeling of what it feels like when you're done and how stoked you are. And then start building that into your belief system. Yeah, I got this. I got jumps.
I love it.
I got tech. I got gnar. I got fitness. Yes. I got the climbs. And I can ride these skinnies. Yeah. So let's do it. Everybody, mountain bike community, riding skinnies all day long. So a couple comments that I pulled out of the plethora of people responding. And thank you all for riding, of course, but also for writing in rideandlaugh1@gmail.com and commenting on the YouTube. And if you're listening to this on any of your podcast players, that's awesome. We appreciate it. Thank you.
Yes.
Thank you. Watching it on YouTube it's almost worth, I would say you should listen and watch, not at the same time. I mean, listen in your car and then go home and watch it again. I mean, this should be a 2-hour commitment, a Ride and Laugh podcast. Sorry, honey. I have to listen. I have to commit I'm committed 2 hours to this podcast.
Yes.
That isn't paying me. But the video that Sage is putting into the YouTube is just awesome. So
Danny.
The skinny episode, if you haven't seen it, when we explain the squirrel catcher skinny, the teeter totter skinny, like Sage really breaks that down in slow motion and it's awesome. So if you haven't seen it, you could catch it on the Instagram, but definitely check it out on YouTube. Even if you just fast forward to that part, like it's really cool. So thank you for doing that, Sage. He is Trail Sage, folks. I mean, he's a master editor, not just a great rider, not just a great dude.
Hey,
master editor here peeking just now in his life so that he can edit on Ride and Laugh podcast. He's peaking at exactly the right time. And we're going to get into that. We're going to get into fitness. We're going to get into peaking at the right time.
Yes.
Not just in editing, but on the trails also. I did want to get into one thing so our comments on the skinnies. Brian on a bike, awesome rider. I haven't ridden with him, but you say he's got great balance. He's a trials guy. He says he doesn't really have a mantra, but he tries to clear his head, think about as little as possible. And that works for him. I find that a mantra helps clear my head. Because if I don't have a mantra going of like, keep it going, keep it going, keep it going, then thoughts instead will come in and take that place. And sometimes those thoughts are like, you don't got this. This is scary. Let's get out of here. Why don't we just ride trail? This is dumb. And then our buddy Stick, you know, who's one of the guys that rides with us, he's in a lot of the videos. And he says that he's pretty good at skinnies. And he says that he rides his brake the same way that you do to get a better feel on top of the skinny, to keep that tension and have really good feedback. And then he talks about how awesome a guys we are. And it's totally biased. I can't even read and how much he enjoys the pod because, you know, it's completely biased. He's our friend. I mean, everyone's just rolling their eyes right now. Like, oh, yeah, that's great. Have your riding buddy give you guys compliments and then talk about it. That's real legitimate. When we talked about the bike stable. Yeah, well, I will take it. We're not picky at all. Thank you, Stick. We love you, buddy. When we talked about the bike stable pod and we got great feedback on there, but we talked about that DW link, the patent expiring. And I love podcasts and I listen to a lot of podcasts, and I listened to a podcast where they talked about that. It was on Single Tracks, I think. But here's what I got out of it was that the DW link and companies like Pivot specifically, they were talking about, but probably Ibis as well. They've worked along with Dave Weagle, who's the DW in DW Link.
I'll be darned.
And so they're saying that, like, yeah, the information is out there for that suspension to be copied now or to be used now, but they've refined it so much over the years with their geometry and their bikes and their technology that it's really a lot better than what that original patent has from 20 years ago.
That makes sense.
And they also made the point that that suspension has come along so far that that stuff even matters less. Because suspension back then, the Fox actual fork and the RockShox actual shock sort of things, you know, they just didn't work that well. But they work so well now that you can have these kind of lesser suspension setups that are still going to be working really well now because the actual technology of the suspension works so much better. So I thought that was really interesting. I wanted to share that with you.
Yeah, that's good stuff. You remember the brain, the specialized brain?
Yeah. That was such a big deal. Like, yeah.
It was so innovative at the time. Yeah. I don't even think they do that anymore, right?
I don't think so. No, I haven't seen that in the literature in a while. Did you ever ride it? I never rode one.
I knew people that had them. Yeah, I had two specialized cambers, but that was the brain only came on like the upper end models, you know.
Yes. Ours were dumb.
That's right. No brain.
No brainless.
Brainless. But yeah, I remember people raving about that. Like it was just like, you know, it was so, I forget how it worked, but basically it knew when you needed the suspension and when you didn't.
Yeah.
And so for cross country, it made a lot of sense.
Well, let us know, listeners, RideLaugh1 at Gmail or comment on the YouTube. Did you have the specialized brain or did you have one of these other kind of innovative suspension systems that were supposed to be the next best thing? You know, what were those? And what was your experience with it? Was it worth it? But I remember that brain was with the really expensive bikes. And I do seem to remember anyone that had it really liking it. So,
yeah,
I don't know.
Yeah. Well, like you said, suspension back then was not that great. So,
yeah, well, I got, so we usually recap our rides from the week, and I had one more ride in Arizona, and then it rained in Arizona. You know, I'm not visiting the desert for rain. So I was pretty annoyed, though. I was actually really, really tired, and it kind of forced me to take a few days off, and I think that was what was best for me.
Yeah,
so, you know, listen to the universe and, you know, just go with the flow of life, but also rain. You know, sometimes keeps us indoors. And so my one ride was a second time that week through Boulder Dash, which is the double black tech trail at Hawes. And so I really wanted to hit it again, just kind of remember some of the lines from the first time through and be able to flow through it. And I was able to do that. And they actually went through and put new paint markers on a whole bunch of the features. You know, they spray those little white dots.
So I
saw some new lines that I didn't even know existed, and of course they're putting dots on like all these huge massive hucks and drops and everything that I didn't even know. I was like, supposed to be written. I'm going way too slow for that, but it was eye-opening. And then there was a couple lines that I took that were because of those white dots, and a couple lines that I saw were because of those white dots. So that was really fun. And I love riding those double black trails on that big bike. It's really fun. But get into what your week on or off the bike was like.
Yeah, you know, as I said in the beginning, the rain, you know, I don't have an indoor trainer, so weather greatly affects, you know, the kind of workouts that I can do. And because of the rain, I ended up relying on some running. So I ran twice. One of them was a massive trail run. I did like a 1,000 feet, which was big for me. Cause I hadn't done something like that in a while. And then I did a couple road rides. And I usually try and sprinkle in a couple hit rides, along with lifting weights and things of that nature. So yeah, last week was a little bit tough. You know, it's when you are an outdoor rider, you know, there's a lot of advantages to that, but there's a lot of negatives. As you can imagine, when it gets cold, you know, it gets really hard to get yourself motivated to get outside. And, you know, when it's raining, you know, if you don't have special rain gear, sometimes it just means, you know, I don't get to work out, you know, and I just have to kind of take a chill like you had to do. You know, it's like, okay, well, maybe this is a good time to just let the body heal, let the body recover. Which I feel like I've been doing a lot of lately, but.
Well, it's interesting that you jumped right into the negative and you didn't even list any of the positives of work. I have this whole list set up and I'm like, at the end of it, I have negatives and you're like, here's what sucks about training outside. I'm just going to get right into it and then pass the baton over to you. So yeah. Tell me a little bit about the running. So your running is, you do trail and road. And I do think 1,000 feet of elevation is a lot. On a trail run.
Yeah, I just started running and I actually find it complements riding really well. It's one of those things where I think people assume that, oh, running, it's like the same muscle. You're using your legs. So it's the same. It's completely different muscles. And so I actually prefer that because I'm not wearing out the same muscles that I am when I'm cycling. So back when I wasn't running, I was getting like, you know, on a good week, I would get like 5 to 6 rides a week, and that really wreaks havoc on your legs. And so you end up doing a lot of recovery, yeah. And blah, blah, blah.
It's a lot. Yeah.
The running has been amazing, Dan. It's like, you still get this amazing aerobic workout, you know, like from running, it's full body, especially a trail run. And so I love that. I love that I'm able to get this nice aerobic workout, but I'm not wasting my legs. So I think I've done a couple big trail runs on a Saturday and still gone out on our Sunday rides and have been fine because I'm not using the same muscles. Yeah.
I've seen those Saturday runs and I'm like, what is he doing? He better not blow it for tomorrow. And you're always fine. You're always fine. And I'm shocked because I would think that they're similar muscles. I mean, if they've got to be. I mean, you should sign up for a duathlon, which is run, bike, run. You know, I mean, if you're saying these are different muscles and it's not bothering you, and I know you're fast, I know that you're putting down some fast times. I mean, for a non-professional, casual, like just kind of running for fun guy, yeah. You're fast. I mean, you're fast on a bike and you're fast on your runs too. You're under a 7-minute mile on some of these runs, aren't you?
Yeah. I'm starting to get back to it. Yeah. I took a long time off. I broke my toe. And so I wasn't, but I'm starting to get back to it, which has been really nice. But yeah, I mean, what are you doing for cross training?
You would recommend the running.
Yes, absolutely. I again, if you're an outdoors person, I can't think of a better way to enjoy the outdoors. You know, one of the things I love about mountain biking is, you know, just being able to, you know, get outside and enjoy nature, you know, that same feeling gets carried over when you're trail running. The difference is when you're mountain biking, sometimes you don't even get to like notice all the things around you because you're going so fast, you know, so your eyes are just like, you know, everywhere else. When you're on a trail run, you're picking up a lot more information. And actually, I think I broke my hand once and I was on a trail run. I was finding all these mountain bike features.
Yeah.
Do you remember that at Mount Penn?
Yes.
I was doing a bunch of trail runs and I was like, Dan, I found all these cool features.
Yeah, you did.
So there's a benefit there. You can kind of scout out different trails and different features on your run.
Yeah. I just want to point out to anyone that's interested in getting into running to start slowly because it's from cycling to running. Running is a very high impact sport and it can really wreak havoc on your joints and your knees. And It's something that you just want to ramp up slowly and then start to, and we have to be careful because if you already have your cardio system kind of set up from mountain biking or cycling, you're already strong in the cardio sense and you feel like you can go longer on some of these runs. But I know some people that just get into running, you know, start getting plantar fasciitis or ankle or knee issues because your body needs to build up that connective tissue and all those stabilizing muscles that are used in running. But the human body was meant to run. I don't have time for it, but I did do some trail running back in the day, and I always enjoyed it.
Yeah. You were doing some sprints for a while, too.
Sprinting is great for you. That's a great thing. If you just go for your walks and you sprint for 10 seconds here and there, four or five sprints, if it's, you know, especially if it's like winter and it's cool out, just open it up. Just count 10 steps, full sprint. It's really good for you. I mean, there's a lot of science that shows like that really fires up your metabolism and growth hormone and all sorts of things. And it's really kind of easy. And it's also kind of fun. I mean, when's the last time, listener, when's the last time that you just opened up and just ran as fast as you could? Yeah. It's fun. Yeah. Don't be really too stiff when you do it, you know, but yeah, like give it a shot. Just go for it. And that's what kids like. When we were kids, we loved just running full speed. It was so much fun. You know, we just like, let's go, let's book it, you know, and you would just run as fast as you could everywhere. So I agree. There's really some benefits of running, but this is not a running podcast.
No.
This is a riding podcast. Yeah. So what I do when on those rainy weeks, I have a lot of indoor stuff that I can do, and I do these indoor things regardless. I have the Wahoo Kicker. I touched on it, I think, in the Bike Stable podcast. I talked about it a little bit, but essentially, I had a friend that was just kind of kicking my butt all over the mountain. He had this trainer, so I bought one, and this is kind of like in the early days of e-bikes. When there was all this anti-e-bike sentiment, or the early days of 29ers, when everyone was anti-29er, you know, like same thing with trainers. When you would see someone's trainer ride pop up, there was a whole contingent of people that would be like, trainers, you should be riding outside no matter what. And I think that's just like as more and more people have gotten trainers and have gotten stronger and use it and see how convenient it is. I think a lot of that sentiment has started to fall away. What do you think, listener? Ride and laugh one at Gmail or comment on the YouTube. You know, do you have a trainer? What were your thoughts about it when you first saw them? You know, did you come around slowly or have you had it for a long time? And what program do you use? So there's the two main ones are Zwift and Trainer Road. The guy that was kicking my butt all over the mountain, our old buddy Cahill, he was using Trainer Road. So
yeah, beast. I figured
that's what I'll use. Yeah. Cahill could ride a bike uphill for sure. Not so fast downhill, but he could crush you uphill.
You know, in defense of all the people that were kind of like poo-pooing the trainer back in the day, the trainer itself has evolved. You know, back then it was like you had rollers and then you had to load the bike onto this like wheel, you know, but now with the smart trainer, like that's no joke now. Like it's literally like catering your rides to whatever you want. Like it's unbelievable how far trainers have come, you know? And then, the Wahoo system, the ecosystem is unbelievable, right? Like you have the fan now, you have the climb where it like raises your bike and all this stuff.
I don't use any of that stuff. That's all. I think that's all gimmicky. I guess if you're on Zwift and you have that virtual ride, then maybe the climb is cool. The fan, you can just buy like cheaper fans. Okay. But it does. I don't know, like if it turns on at certain times. I don't know what the big deal about the fan is. I have a fan with a remote, you know, which is pretty cheap, and I just turn it on as soon as I start to get warm. Highly recommend a fan. I actually have two fans. Staying cool on these indoor rides will allow you to ride harder and feel stronger and finish your workouts instead of just. There's no reason to get sweat acclimated to that level. I mean, I'm dripping sweat at the end of these things, and I have two fans on me. So one below and one above, and I'm still dripping sweat at the end of these things. So it's excellent point that the technology of the trainers has moved forward so much. These electronically controlled trainers. And listener, do you have an erg trainer or are you using the regular trainer? I know they both work. I see people on Trainer Road with both of them. And so one of them is going to essentially talk to an app and will give the resistance as the app tells it to. So it's essentially shifting gears for you, and you have no control over that. You know, you can turn up the percentage and turn down the percentage if things are too hard, and you can always stop, but it's yeah. getting hard when it's time to get hard. And then the other ones, the other type, you're actually shifting and getting the tension as you go. And I've never actually used the traditional old school trainer. I bought this Erg, I don't know, what was it, 4 or 5 years ago? I have over 10,000 miles on the trainer bike, so it was a while ago.
Yeah,
yeah. And I use Trainer Road, and it's a fantastic app, and it's not cheap. I think it's like, I don't know what it is now, $12 or $13 a month. I pay for it annually.
Yeah.
And it's just, they just keep adding more and more features to it. It's got automatic FTP detection, so you don't have to take FTP tests anymore, which is kind of, FTP is like your baseline strength, functional threshold power. It's supposed to be the power that you could technically hold for an hour, but there's no way. And if you can hold your FTP for an hour, it's not your FTP. It's not high enough. The FTP, if you're riding at FTP for like 10, 15 minutes, you're exhausted. So I'm not sure exactly how that works, but it's a number that they use to calculate.
You know what? You brought up a really good point there, because I often question the FTP too. And I think it's now, call me crazy, but I think they should actually have an FTP for the type of rider you are. Because, you know, when you're a road rider, you know, functional threshold means something completely different. Like you're going out for a ride, you need to be able to hold an excruciating amount of power for a really long time. Whereas a mountain biker, your threshold, and I might get myself into trouble here because I'm not really into cross. I used to be into cross country, but I'm not anymore. But even as a cross country rider, the terrain is just so up and down. You're not constantly putting out power. And plus you're having to deal with obstructions in the trail. Like, it's not just like I'm on a road and I can just focus on power. There's other things you have to focus on. So it's hard to get like a consistent output when you're mountain biking. And listeners, let me know if that's wrong, like if you feel differently. But I just think even nowadays when you watch the mountain bike races, the pro races, like they are so technical. I mean, the stuff that they put in the trails now, this is not like your mom and dad's cross country ride. This is legit tech, crazy ups, crazy downs. And I think that's where I'm getting at, you know, that there should be a different threshold measurement for road riders versus mountain bikers. I mean, is that crazy?
No, I think it's totally accurate. I actually think that the FTP is just a number that's kind of been like pegged as this is what we're using. And so this is what we're using. You know, people are used to it. People know their number. And even on the Trainer Road podcast, which I listen to as much as I can, they're pretty long, but I usually try to listen to them. Even though some of their nutrition tips trigger me, as you might know from the nutrition episode. I get very triggered. if you want to see a guy yelling in his car at his his radio, watch me during a Trainer Road podcast when they're talking about stopping at the gas station to refuel on gummy bears. I'm like, oh no, I can't. You know, I'm frantically hitting the fast forward button, probably like our listeners are doing right now. They're like, yeah, we get it. We're fast forwarding through this whole rant. So they talked about FTP, and you know, they're constantly looking for ways to measure power, and they're always revising how their system is done. And I love that company. They're so innovative. And they talked about it. They were like, yeah, you know, FTP may not be the best tool to measure this power and this number, but it's what everyone uses. And so, like, I think they probably had some other, probably like internal proprietary ideas, but the pushback might be too much from, you know, trying to get people over from Zwift or new people over. And you know how just cycling, man, especially road cycling, it moves so slow. Like they just allow disc brakes on those bikes, right? Are the disc brakes allowed on those bikes now?
Come on, guys.
Yeah. It's just like so steeped in, like, you know, tradition, and this is the way that we did it. So this is the way it needs to be done forever. And so I just think that that's, whereas mountain biking, it's like, oh, dropper post, more suspension, different suspension, you know, everything. We'll take it. You know, if it's going to make us better riders, we'll take it.
Yeah.
We're not picky. Yeah. So as far as training goes, my training, I do probably I'm on the low volume plan, which is three rides a week on Trainer Road. So it's every other day, and then there's a 2 day break in there at one point. And I do almost always, I do the Tuesday ride and the Thursday ride. You can structure it to be Monday, Wednesday, Friday. You can structure it however you want. So I usually ride the trainer for an hour on Tuesday and then an hour on Thursday. And then the Sunday ride is a 90-minute ride. And I only do that ride if we get rained out.
Yeah.
And can't mountain bike. And it's harder. The 90-minute ride is almost always harder than a mountain bike ride. So, and the hour-long rides are no picnic either. And you go through different phases of training. If anyone's interested in Trainer Road, let us know. What do you use? Do you use Trainer Road? Ride and Laugh 1 at Gmail. Comment on the YouTube. Do you use Trainer Road? Do you use Zwift? Are you using something else? I know there's Sufferfest, and I know Wahoo has a system out there. I know there's other things out there. So curious what everyone's thoughts are. And but the structured training, the plans that they let you get into, and then the artificial intelligence that they use to be able to estimate your FTP. You don't have to take an FTP test. That used to be this like massive 20-minute long test, or there was an 8-minute test that was really 16 minutes because it was and you would just it was I dreaded it. And then you wouldn't do as well as you wanted on it, and you would thought, what's my actual FTP? Because I was tired that day. And so now it just like takes all your rides and all your trainer outside rides and your trainer rides, and it puts them all together and it says, here's your FTP. I mean, there's just a lot of really, really cool tech in that program. And I used to ride outside every Thursday. So I only did really one trainer ride a week. And as my life has kind of evolved and gotten a little bit busier, and I stopped doing those outdoor Thursday morning rides, I've been more on the trainer twice a week. And so I'm getting more of the structured training, and I am getting stronger. I am getting stronger. So, and it's less burnout, I think, because I'm not doing those mega Thursday rides. So talk a little bit about your, because that's the inside component, and you don't have a trainer. So talk about why you don't have a trainer. Would you have a trainer if money wasn't an issue? And or do you talk about your HIIT rides that you do outside and the benefits of those, and if you would continue to do those regardless?
Man, you know, I don't know.
Too many questions. It's too many questions.
No.
No, that's not the problem.
One at a time, please. Yeah.
No, it's actually the interrupting. The interrupting is the problem. I would have got two questions answered by now if you would just shut your trap.
No. Let me start with the trainer, because my thoughts on it have actually changed. And a lot of that had to do with money, you know, and it still has to do. I don't have a trainer now because of money. But I didn't have a trainer before, less about money, but because I found a lot of value in training outside. And I don't just ride my road bike outside. I mean, you know, when I'm doing a structured ride, then it's always the road bike. But if the weather's nice, you know, I get that call from Stick, or sometimes I just want to go out on the single speed, I'll sprinkle in those rides as well. And for me, there's a real big advantage to training outside. And a lot of it's not measurable. You know, like on the trainer, you can't argue the efficiency of a trainer. Like I'm not even going to bother trying to argue that, because obviously, you know, all the pros are doing it. Like, you know, if you want a structured, specifically developed ride, the trainer, you can't beat that. But I would argue
like
that
an hour of a trainer ride, you can probably get the same sort of benefit in 2.5 or 3 hours outside. I mean, it's that sharpened, and it's that precise.
It really is. So I guess if we're going to just talk about the training part of it, so then I'll focus on just the HIIT road rides that I do.
What does HIIT stand for?
High intensity interval training, which I just learned that like 2 years ago. I was like seeing that all over Strava. I'm like, what's HIIT?
It's kind of a new thing. Yeah, it's kind of a new thing. And it's a full body workout, and they're fantastic. You can do a HIIT workout in like 10 or 15 minutes and completely thrash yourself and get a great workout that they're really good for you. You've taken that to the bike, and I don't know that people have heard of this concept. I don't see anyone else riding HIIT workouts on the bike except for you.
Danny, here's an embarrassing story. I didn't know what a hit was. And someone had like Strava titled their ride, like something, something hit. And I like wrote a message like, oh my God, are you okay? Ah. They're like, no, no, it's high intensity interval training. I was like, oh, now I feel like an idiot. But yeah. So, but yes, right. So a hit is very, it's a structured workout. And so the way that I construct my hit rides, because I don't have a smart trainer, is I have a power meter, and you certainly don't need one. If you're someone that's like just kind of interested in getting into fitness, you don't need a power meter to start. I have a heart rate monitor. I do feel like if you do want to get into more serious fitness, that's probably the one piece of gear that I would say you don't want to go without. And I have I'm touching my chest, but like, I have a chest heart rate monitor. Dan's like, why are you rubbing your chest? I have a chest heart rate monitor, but you can also do a watch.
If you're listening on the podcast player, you're missing all of the chest work that Sage is putting in. You can only see this on YouTube. All the chest play. Music. What is happening here? mountain bike, stay on subject.
That's a whole nother episode, but
people in their cars very disappointed right now that they're missing this chest play. We got a new word I think we just came up with.
Chest play.
And a whole new demographic apparently.
Oh my Lord.
But I recommend the heart rate monitor too. Coming back on, yes. Yeah, heart rate monitor, $30. Totally easy piece of equipment to own, and yeah, very useful. And I like it more on the chest than the watch, because the chest is much more, it's more accurate, but it's much faster. So if you want to see what your heart rate is, it's right there. Whereas some of the optical sensors on your watch and that sort of thing, they might take a little bit of time to catch up. So if you ever got to the top of the hill and you're like, and you look down and you want to see what your heart rate is, oh, wow, I just hit, 180 or whatever it is. I've tried both and I prefer the chest. So anyways, continue without fondling yourself.
So the third piece of equipment that I use is the bike computer. And, again, if you're just kind of dabbing into fitness, I would argue the bike computer and power meter are, I guess if we're going with order importance, heart rate monitors one. And that's, like you said, it's inexpensive. So there's not much investment that you have to make there. The second most important tool is probably the bike computer itself. And
you got to pair the monitor to something.
Well, you can pair the monitor to most watches now. Like most watches have some kind of a heart rate. So that's kind of where I'm assuming that if you already have like some kind of a Fitbit or something like that you can monitor that way. But yeah, if you're, and we're specifically talking about biking here. So if we're talking about biking, then having a proper bike computer that's able to give you all the numbers. I can't tell you how handy it is to know what my heart rate is on these efforts. And because I have a power meter, I can also see that in real time as well. And so I use the heart rate and the power meter in conjunction to structure these rides. And so, again, if you're just getting into fitness, one of the things that is probably really important, it might be the most important, is knowing your heart rate zones. And so what that means is knowing what your resting heart rate is, and then knowing what your max heart rate is. And then between your resting and your max, you're going to have all these zones. And I think there's five of them. Don't quote me on that, but I think there's five of them. And so when you're doing a really hard effort, then you want to be in those higher zones. You want to be in what are the name of the zones? What's that? The highest one is like,
I don't even know. I don't
anaerobic or something like that. Oh, you don't?
I'm not a zone guy. No. I mean, wow. I plug the trainer in and I go, and I mean, I know that information's there. I've just never really paid attention.
I'll be darned.
The trainer takes care of it all for me. And then when I'm out riding my bike, I'm just riding. I'm going, I'm not out for a recovery ride or a hard ride. We're usually just riding. Some days I feel better and then you want to push it, and some days you're kind of going slower. But yeah, I don't even really use the zones. I know they exist. I see them on the apps and I completely ignore them.
I'm a zone guy.
The zones.
I'm in the
zone. So much a zone guy that you don't know how many zones there are and you don't know what they're called.
All right, let me do my best. There's anaerobic. There's anaerobic. So that's basically, 10% to your max you know, so whatever. So my max heart rate, for instance, is like a buck 72, you know, so if I'm hitting a buck 72, a buck 74, that I am maxed out. Like that is as high as my heart will go. So that means my anaerobic zone is from like, I'm just gonna make this up, but maybe like 164 to like 174, you know, it's like that 10 beat in there. The next one down, I think, is threshold. And so that's what you were talking about. Like when you're riding a threshold, you know, you're going to be in that, like that it's uncomfortable.
It's just over FTP. I think threshold is just over exactly. FTP. Riders, let us know. Someone go ahead and just put in the comments the
Sage the wrong
and correct this. Yeah. Last podcast, I was wrong three times. Yeah. Sage is like, hold my beer. I'm going to be wrong five times on one answer.
No way. I think I'm in this. I think I got this. And so threshold for me is between like 155 and like 165 or something like that, you know? So it just goes in succession. The next one under threshold. Oh man. All right, maybe you got me here, but I think there's endurance.
Is sweet spot one of them? Endurance?
It could be sweet spot, yes. And then maybe underneath sweet spot is endurance.
You have no idea. You have no idea.
The last one is you're dead. Congratulations, coma. Your heart has stopped.
Yeah
coma.
Yeah,
it's coma.
Yeah.
You know
anyway.
What?
I was teasing you about how, I forgot, I needed to mention this earlier, and I forgot. In the skinny episode, I totally teased you that our buddy and master trail builder Dane had put you claimed that he built a bed out of pine needles and put it next to the skinny. And I was like, yeah, I don't think he did that on purpose. I think that was just some garbage that ended up there. And Dane listened to the episode and he called you and he was like, yes, I built a mattress out of pine needles and I put it there for your safety. You're welcome. So yeah, Sage one, Dan zero, 100%. So maybe you nailed these zones. Let us know, listeners.
Yeah,
ride and left one at Gmail or comment in the YouTube. Let us know what the someone do a comparison of the actual zones versus what Sage said they were. I'd like to see that. That would be funny.
Well, the reason why the zones are important when you're doing a structured workout is you don't want to be, there are times when you want to go to the max, right? When you want to go to max effort, but there are other times when you just want to hit threshold or when you're on a recovery ride, you know? And so if I'm on a recovery ride, I know I want to be in that recovery zone. So I don't want to be in the 150s, you know, again, that's personal to me, you know, you have to figure out what your heart rate zones are. But for me, I don't want to be in that 150. I don't want to be in the 140. If I'm doing a recovery ride, I'm looking to be in that 120, 130. Like I'm barely working.
There's very specific zone
centric
training. I mean, there's training where I know that you're like supposed to stay in zone two and not move out of it. And the longer that you train at that, the better, the stronger your zone two gets. Like it widens, that sort of thing. So like, if you're really into this, and I think people that do like train for marathons and are really running and, or maybe even training for mountain bike race. I mean, listeners, are you using the zones? Am I the only one that's ignoring the zones? I mean, should I be paying attention to the zones? Ride and Life One at Gmail, comment on the YouTube. So, okay. So you're using the zones and certain zones for certain things. How are you structuring these hit rides then? What are these like? You're using hills or are you straightaways?
So that's another thing that I wanted to kind of just touch on, but I don't want to like go too deep on it because it could be a whole episode in itself. But because I'm a mountain biker, I structure my hit rides, even though I'm on a road bike, I structure them to mimic the type of riding that I do. And so I'm not going out on a straightaway on my training days. Like, well, first of all, I don't have any straight roads around here. I'm in a very hilly area, but that works out because the kind of mountain biking that I do is very hilly. And also the hill climbs that we normally do, Dan, are within that like 100 to 300. I mean, every so often you'll hit like something bigger, but it's usually about 100 to 300 feet, right? That area is usually the climbs that we do. So when I'm structuring those rides, I'm picking hills that are around me, and I'm just basically riding up and down this hill over and over and over.
Sprinting up the hill.
That's right. Sprinting up.
And then recovering on the way back down and then turning around going up the same hill.
That's exactly right.
Well, the trainer is similar torture. It's
different though, right, Danny? Because
it's a different kind of torture.
When you're on the trainer, you don't actually stop pedaling. Like
true.
You don't,
true.
You know, and yeah. Well, in mountain biking, we do stop pedaling. When you're on a downhill, well, I mean, sometimes you could pedal a downhill, but a lot of times you're not pedaling. And so it really, being outside and doing that on a road bike, it actually does mimic power on, power off, right? Whereas the trainer is, your power is always on. You might not be going max effort, but your power is always on. So I do think that's
for you, man.
Sage is a
beast. I mean, like, you've been doing these hit rides for a while, and you say you do them to mimic mountain biking. So I know I interrupted your thought there. I also want to throw out, are you thinking about mountain biking when you're doing that? Or are you just focused on the road?
You're not visualizing anything. Danny, you know when you're on that trainer and that pain comes in. Like, you ain't thinking about nothing but, like, can this be over? Like, it hurts so bad, you know, and I might be turning off some people here, but, like, when you're in that pain zone, like, when you're doing a max effort, I don't know what I'm thinking about, except I'm looking at my computer and, like, I'm like, okay, I'm just so focused on hitting those numbers. You know, if it's a max effort, then, you know, I'm in that 250, 300 watt range. And I'm like, can I hold this for a minute or 2 minutes? You know, and that's all I'm thinking about. It's like, just don't let go. You're almost there. I usually have music playing, and that's a whole nother tip. I mean, you know, if you can find music to fit your different workouts. But yeah, I mean, what are you thinking about on those hard efforts?
Well, it's different on the trainer because I can close my eyes. You know what I mean? Like, I can just suffer through it. I always have music on. Our buddy Stick said that he doesn't listen to music or watch anything on the TV or anything like that. I don't understand. I know. To me, that's like another, that would make it so much harder. It's another level of focus, and Stick's got it. But I listen to music, and the harder it is, sometimes the more I'm listening, the less I'm listening. I mean, listener, do you listen to music on the trainer? Then I watch mountain bike YouTube. So I watch first person mountain bike YouTubes. I like to watch the guys that are going really fast. I like to watch people that are, depending on what I'm doing. I need to watch, like, I want to watch, like, pro level riders, like, really going fast. Sometimes I can watch slower tech stuff. Trail Sage is always a great video to watch, you know, check it out. Awesome video.
Recovery days.
I'm in it. Yeah. On recovery days. I see the videos with me in front, and I'm like, oh, well, he's not going that fast because I know that. But I put the TV right in front of my trainer. Excuse me.
Hey now.
Okay, I've recovered.
You got choked up. Yeah. You got choked up. Yeah.
Thinking about this TV, it's really gotten me through some hard times. I got mountain bike YouTube. I got that right in front of my trainer, and I fire up a good video, and I put the music on, and I hammer away. I got my fans on, but a lot of times when it gets really hard, I close my eyes and I visualize maybe climbing up something, a really tough trail at our local network. I mean, I'll visualize that, or I'll just close my eyes and just, like, start counting down as much as I can. I mean, there's all sorts of mental tricks. It's one of the reasons I listen to the Trainer Road podcast, is just to stay motivated, especially in the beginning when I first started doing it, because some of these workouts are so hard, and they just talk about consistency. And I think that's where it's at. Like, whatever you're doing, if it's hard enough that, you know, you're getting winded and you're getting tired and you're consistent with it, I think that's probably what the key is. And if you can structure it, so the Trainer Road is structured. I think Zwift has structured training. I'm sure all these apps do. You're not really structured, right? You're just, did you find a plan somewhere that you're using, or are you just like, okay, I feel good, I'm going to go all out and do these hill repeats?
Yeah. So I know this is a mountain bike podcast, but unfortunately, because I do love running and specifically trail running, it's made my training that much more difficult. When I wasn't running, I was doing about 5 to 6 rides, depending on weather, but 5 to 6 rides. And I would do 2 recovery rides and, like, 2 hit rides, and then 1, like, super long ride, you know, and then obviously we'd have the Sunday mountain bike ride too. So you're just sprinkling all these different rides.
And we were burning out. We were burning out. You and I were both burning out. When we rode our mountain bikes all the time.
Yeah.
And we didn't take rest. And we'll talk about that. And that might be like another half a pod or another pod.
That's a whole
recovery.
Yeah, that's a whole pod.
And the appropriateness of rest. And we did have a comment I think it was Alex, but we did have a comment a few weeks ago about fitness, and he was coming out. I apologize if I got the name wrong, but the gentleman was coming out of the winter and just said he felt fatigued. And so Sage and I have built in, we can talk about this later, but we've kind of built in a rule for recovery in the winter. And a lot of times the life just ends up kind of taking care of that recovery, like especially the rainy weeks where you don't get out or you're busy at work. But now with all the indoor opportunities that some of us have, we don't always get that. But anyways, I'm jumping ahead. Continue with what you were saying with the running and the road.
So the structured rides, my fitness schedule, I guess, is kind of not as dedicated as it could be. Like I'm sure I could be a much stronger rider if I dedicated more time to just riding, but because I'm sprinkling these runs in, it gets really hard. So, you know, like this week I did a hit ride, you know, but you know, I didn't do one last week. You know, I did a hit run, you know, I did that huge trail run. So I'm constantly balancing those efforts. And the most important thing for me is getting that aerobic fitness up, you know, and just letting the legs be what they are. But aerobically, I just want to try and hit a number, you know, I want to hit a certain amount of hours. I want to hit a certain effort level. And the other things that I do that I don't track on Strava, but you know, I'm playing basketball and I'm lifting weights, you know, those are all things that I'm including into my aerobic overall fitness. Yeah. And so I guess what I'm getting at is if I feel like you and I go out for a ride and you're kicking my butt all over the mountain, then that's the time when I'll be like, okay, I need to put a few more hit rides in here and kind of back off of the trail running. It's really, I'm just kind of gauging my efforts off of you or the other people that I'm riding with. Or if I have an event, you know, I don't race now, but you know, you and I have mountain bike trips. You know, if I know I'm going to Arizona with you, or if we're planning a trip to New England, that means we're doing like back to back to back to back massive rides. You know, and these rides, you know, we're talking like 5 hours every day, each day back to back. And so I'll up my training, my fitness level, you know, I'll up the amount of rides I do on the week. I'm upping that, you know, and then the key to that is actually backing off the week before. So if it is a race or a mountain bike event, that week before the event, I actually back off completely. Maybe I'll do a ride. It's a recovery style ride, but up until that point, man, I'm cramming in all the effort that I can get. And so I don't know if that's the right thing to do, but that's just the way that I have been doing it. It's been working out. You know, I'm keeping up with you. Okay. I think, you know,
keeping up with me. You kick my butt all over the place. You're strong rider. Incredibly strong. Yeah, it's definitely working for you. It's interesting that there's all these expensive apps and structured training and coaches and podcasts specifically on training, and you just doing it intuitively and you're kicking butt. And I think genetically, I think you're strong, but you push yourselves. And it's interesting because you touched on a few really, really interesting topics there. One of which is motivation. You know, what is getting you out to train like this? You know, we're not racing. And if you're racing, then great, good on you. And there's the motivation, right? You want to place better. You want to be faster than last year. You want to be faster than the other guy. That's an easy one. If you have a trip coming up, okay, I want to be able to ride every day on this trip. I want to be able to ride with the A group on this trip. I want to be able to ride with the B group or the C group, or I just want to be able to finish this trail. You know, I mean, there's all different levels and there's all different motivations. For you and me, it's just fun on Sundays. I just feel like fitness equals fun. The more fit you are, the more fun you can have going uphill, the faster you can go, the more trails you can hit. You know, we started doing this way before e-bikes were an option. So it's like, if we want to get multiple runs, and we've never been shuttle guys, we've always been earn your turn. I think we're either too lazy, or we don't have enough friends to shuttle, or we just weren't interested in
kicking the math.
I mean, I've seen shuttle days pop up, you know, like, and it's just like not something I'm interested in. And so let us know. I mean, I know shuttle days have to be a lot of fun. We love the downhill parks. It's the same thing. You get to shuttle your local trail instead of taking a lift up. We just never have done that. Have you ever done a shuttle day?
Yeah, we did. We both did. Ron and Sue. Yep. Ron and Sue. Reddish.
That
knob.
Was one, One ride up. It's hardly a day.
The scariest ride I've ever been on, by the way. Oh my gosh. Yeah.
The ride up, not the ride down.
The ride down was fine.
The ride down was fine. The ride up, we were in Ron's van. And if anyone's been to Virginia going up Reddish Knob, it's a one lane road. And for some reason, every truck coming down is towing a boat. I don't understand what was going on.
There's no water.
Oh my God. There was just trucks, giant trucks and boats everywhere. And we literally, like, Sage and I looked at each other and put our helmets on in the van.
We're in
like,
the car, okay, yeah.
I think we are holding on for dear life. I can't wait to drop off this mountain onto my bicycle because this road is so scary. I remember that.
Maybe
we just got traumatized from shuttle days. So
yeah.
The other thing I wanted to talk about, so there's motivation, and that's really interesting. RideAndLaugh1@gmail.com, comment on the YouTube. What motivates you? What gets you on your trainer? What gets you outside? Do you need more motivation? I mean, we could do a whole pod on motivation, get you out there. You know, and you guys know me at this point, like I get that fitness. You got it. If you want it, visualize it, see it, make it happen. You know, just get that fitness up a little bit. You're going to have more fun on the trail. You're going to feel better. Start clearing uphill features. Uphill tech is really fun, man. Getting a really hard piece of uphill tech where you're maximum breathing and you're also like doing all those moves. And you're just laying down the power. We talked about that in the single speed episode, but you know, if you can do it on your single speed, then now you can really do it on your geared bike. And yeah, I mean, getting a tricky piece of uphill tech is so satisfying. The other thing that you talked about was with the outdoor training with some of the other benefits. And you just kind of glossed over it. Like, you know, I get to be outdoors, but there is legitimate scientific proven benefit to being outside. Getting sunlight on us is fantastic. Getting sunlight on our skin is fantastic. Getting morning sun on our eyeballs is fantastic. Your grounding is fantastic. Touching the dirt, touching the trees is also good for you. And just being in nature, if you're a mountain biker, you probably love being in nature. And I think if you're a human, we all resonate with being in nature. It's a peacefulness about there. You know what I mean? Like that's our peace, is getting out on trails. Nothing gets me like more excited than just like seeing like a ribbon of trail. You know, I went hiking with my family in Arizona. We went on several awesome hikes, and we'd get up to the peak of these mountains and you look down and you would just see like a ribbon of trail down there. And I would just be like, oh yeah.
You know?
You just
for sure.
Yeah. I want to shred. I want to ride, you know? So, that's kind of another benefit, I think, to being outdoors. There are the drawbacks, and you talked about that with the weather and the rain and some of those challenges and some days that you probably just can't train if all of your stuff is outdoor. So would you, if money was not an issue, would you have an indoor erg trainer at this point? What would you do there? Because they have outdoor training for Trainer Road, like where you can load the workout onto your bike computer and do the workout outdoors. You just have to find like the right terrain. And then, so you could continue to do structured training outdoors. And I've heard people do it and talk about it and really like it. I haven't done it. I don't ride a road bike outside, but let us know, listener, RideAndLaugh1@gmail.com. Have you done outdoor structured training? And on the YouTube, have you done that outdoor training? What's your impressions of that? And is that something worthwhile looking into? Do you recommend that for Sage? And let's hear, Sage, what would you do if money wasn't an issue? Would you have an indoor erg?
Yeah, the problem now, Danny, is time. I'm so between the podcast and my channel, and then having to pick up side work, I don't have time, you know. And so when it does
rain, it's less time. It's more structured. I mean, I do these rides before work. It's an hour on the trainer, and then like an hour and a half all told between getting on, getting off, and getting everything ready, and you're done. Yeah.
I know, but when I have that schedule, but and it rains on the day that or the time zone that I want to go run, like if it's at like, oh, I'm planning on running at 2 and it starts to rain, it would just really, there was a couple times already this year where I was just like, man, I didn't get to go outside, but if I had a trainer, I probably would have, or a treadmill, one or the other, I probably would have gotten a good workout in. And I never thought about that until this year. Like I really just was not interested in getting a trainer because I you had mentioned, and I'm just going to backtrack a little bit here, but you had mentioned some of the advantages of being outside, and let me add to that. I also feel like there's a little bit of grit that gets developed too, you know, where you're riding when it's like 10 below, you know, or you're riding and it's raining, you know, there's a mental grit that kind of gets burned in as well. I'm not saying that you don't have mental grit, because you are a really strong rider and you definitely have some mental grit, but there is something to that, that, you know, you're going out there, there's a mindset where you're just like, yeah, it's raining on me right now, and you're still getting it done. You know, there's that extra level. Yeah. And then
before I had the trainer, I rode, or even when I did have the trainer for a while, I rode all winter. You know, I rode the fat bike at West, and I would go out, it'd be 16, 17 degrees. And I'd get all geared up and I would do that ride. And I felt like a badass. I felt tough. It's like, I'm getting it done. And I would say that there's a tremendous amount of mental grit in finishing the hit rides that you're doing and in finishing these trainer rides. You know, getting on an indoor trainer and pushing through a really hard hour or 75 minutes or 90 minute training ride, it takes a ton of mental grit. It's almost more mental than it is physical sometimes to keep on going, because all you got to do is stop. It's so easy to get off. And so I just lock in my mind that I don't stop. I almost never give up on a trainer ride, and I almost never touch the intensity, which isn't what they tell you to do.
let me give you one more advantage to training outside. And I know I know that's not the question that you want, but it just, again, it popped into my head. And that is when I'm training outside, I'm able to mimic the movements of the mountain bike. Whereas on a trainer, yes, you can stand on a trainer. Yes, of course you can stand on a trainer, but it's really, even if you do stand and even if you sway, you're still not mimicking mountain biking exactly. And I know that you have a Rip Row, and we didn't even get to touch on that. But so you're able to get that mountain bike movement in there. But for other people that don't have a Rip Row and they just have a smart trainer, the advantage of being outside, whether I'm on the road bike or I'm on a mountain bike, and by the way, I have a power meter on my mountain bike as well, is that I'm specifically, and I do this when I'm on the road bike, I actually mimic the movements that I'm doing on a mountain bike. There are times when I have to stand, sit, and then I'm throwing the bike back and forth, you know, I'm lurching forward, leaning back, I'm mimicking these movements. And so I'm getting a full body training that, and I could be completely wrong, but I don't know that you can get that on the trainer. Now, again,
there's
advantages and disadvantages to that, right? Because you're getting a very focused effort on your legs. Like, it's very focused, but now you have to fill in the upper body with something, and you've chose to do that with the Rip Row, you know, with strength training. I can't even speak. I forget what your original question is. I'm sorry that just popped into my head. But my God,
I think that's a great point. I don't know that how much upper body strength you're really building by thrashing yourself around on a road bike.
Not much.
Riding Life One at Gmail and commenting on YouTube. Like, you know, I'm not sure how much. I would still say you would want a Rip Row if you had that sort of device. And we're going to have to talk about that on another episode. And I would definitely recommend strength training. I recommend strength training to everybody, mountain bikers,
for sure,
especially, but all of us. But I do think there is an element of balance in there. There's an element of actually being on a real bicycle. And, you know, I asked if you were like pretending or visualizing that you were on a mountain bike on some of these rides, and you said no, but it kind of sounds like in a way you are, you know. And you talked about in the skinny episode about riding the white line, about practicing your skinnies on your road bike on the white line. And there's another opportunity. You're outdoors, you're practicing a bike skill, maybe on the downhill, maybe on the uphill, while you're under tension, laying down power, you're practicing riding in a straight line, which also happens to be how you ride a steep uphill skinny. So you have that in your bag. You have
track
that
stands
in your bag more than, and track stands, all those sorts of technical things. So I think outdoor rides, I think the perfect setup is probably an erg trainer and an outdoor setup where you can do your structured training rides outdoors, which I haven't messed around with yet. I'm really curious. I know I already asked it, but Riding Life One at Gmail and the YouTube comments, has anyone tried these outdoor structured rides? And what do you do, listener? What do you do? What's your training? How do you feel? What is your fitness routine? We've only talked about the cardio aspect. There's a strength aspect that we're going to talk about in another episode. And there's also kind of a technique aspect that we're going to talk about in another episode. There's things like manual machines, right? You know, where you're going to be practicing getting that wheel up, and there's the Rip Row, which we've referenced a couple times, and which I took video of myself doing so that we could have it for this pod, and we're not even using it, but we'll have it for the future. I even put a shirt on for the sake of the YouTube. I even put a shirt on because I usually don't work out with a shirt because it's my house.
I want
my family to be impressed.
Yeah.
Don't act like you're not impressed.
Listen, I don't want to put an idea into your head, but if you make the Rip Bro your gratitude, we could still use that video.
Oh. Yeah, no, I'm not. It's not my gratitude this week. It's not. Well, should we get into it? Should we get into our gratitudes?
Yeah, let's do it.
That seems like a good segue because I feel like, I mean, I really feel like we could talk about that. And I want to see what the kind of comments come in and what kind of questions come in. I do think that we're very fit. You know, Sage and I used to joke around that. And I used to always say that we were in the top, what did I say? We were in the top 20% of riders. And you're like, no, we're not. You know, and then I would be like, dude, it's probably like top 15. And you're like, no. And I'm like, top 10, definitely top 10. And you always argued with me, but I'll tell you what, I look at our Strava numbers, and Strava is another interesting thing that we didn't really touch on too much that definitely goes into the fitness pod, but also the social aspect. And we could talk about Strava as a really interesting subject. But I look at our Strava numbers, I think we are top 20%.
I don't know, man. I mean, it's a pyramid,
go.
Right?
Here we go.
Listen, 18, in your defense, 18, it's a pyramid. 18. It's a pyramid, right? So as you get higher up in the percentage, it's a smaller number of people, right? So if you're putting the pros at the top, that's the top 1%, you know, and then it's slowly, right? So if you're at the bottom, you know, there's thousands, millions of people at the bottom of the pyramid. So
what about at our age, right? at our age, what if we limit it that way? Then we're definitely top 20%.
I don't know, Danny. I don't know.
So humble. I'm the opposite. I'm like, yeah, we're definitely top 24. I'm the opposite as long as I'm sitting in a comfortable chair at home. You put me with 20 other riders and we'll watch me come in 19th and be like, well, I don't know what happened there. So anyways, I do think that we're pretty fit. That anyone that's ridden with us, we do go up and down the mountain and we're not racing, but we get it done. So, and we work really hard. We both work really hard at this fitness and the cardio fitness, and we'll get into the strength and we'll get into the technique, as well. And I just feel like the more that I've been able to use the Trainer Road program and I could go either way here with my mountain bike gratitude. I could go with the Wahoo Erg or the Trainer Road, but I got to give it up to Trainer Road. I got to make my mountain bike gratitude a program called Trainer Road. I mean, how about that for irony? And I hate the name. Yeah, I hate the name. I wish it could be Trainer Bike. I mean, don't make, you know how I feel about road riding, people. But they called it Trainer Road. That's their, and I've embraced it. And it's for mountain bikers also. It's just the name of it. But this thing, I mean, they put the resources in. It's always getting better. It's always got innovation. Now they have this thing where it tells you when to take a rest day based on their input. It tells you when to take it easy. I mean, it's just getting smarter and smarter. But I just thought that was a really cool update. The automatic FTP, the way that you can set a race or an event and it will train you for that and then give you a week off, you know, and taper you in the right way. And then like, you're good to go for that event. And that's really cool. That's a really cool thing to have. You don't need to even know your heart rate zones if you have Trainer Road. So a mountain bike gratitude of the week is Trainer Road. It's awesome. It's really hard, but that's what we do. What we do is really hard and you put the effort in and then it pays off on the trail and it feels good. It feels good to be fit. It feels good to be strong. And so I love it. So thank you, Trainer Road. Gratitude.
Fair enough.
What do you got, Sage?
Well, my gratitude is also going to be a shameless plug for a different app. And we talked about it several times, but Strava, it's become such a powerful tool. And, you know, obviously there's differences between the paid and the free version. But even if with the free version, it's just such a great way to just track your workouts. And again, it, you know, we talked about those three things, you know, having a heart rate monitor, bike computer, power meter. Add the Strava to that. Maybe that's the first step. You know, maybe that's the first step, getting an app like Strava. And there are other, I don't want to say the Strava's only, there's other apps. I just don't know what they are. but get that app.
There's no other apps. There's no other apps. That's it. Strava. I mean, Strava's That's taking it. Over. There used to be. Yeah. We used to use
Endomundo.
There was all Endomundo. Yeah. I almost said Fandango. I was like, I think that's the movie one, actually. Rotten Tomatoes, I think, was one of them.
Yeah. Yeah.
But everyone's on Strava now. Maybe some people just are in the Garmin atmosphere. I know some of the runners are really into the Garmin, you know, platform. You can obviously you can have both, and I don't know, everyone, I've never heard anyone say anything other than are you on Strava. I haven't heard any other, so it feels like it's the primary one.
But that's like the first step, right? So if you're wanting to get into fitness, having a piece of software, and I'm just using Strava, but like having a piece of software to track that is really important. So for me, Strava's is become much more than that. You know, I track my fitness, but you know, because I had the paid version, I'm also able to use the heat maps. And so I've found trails using Strava, you know, and the social aspect of it too. I wish that they had a better messaging system, but reaching out to people and being like, hey, you know, I've never ridden here. What's this trail like? You know, or hey, what are the trail conditions like? If I'm interested in riding at Smedley and I want to know, you know, if I see Jim riding Smedley, I mean, say, hey, what are the trails like? So gratitude for the app Strava. It's just been so handy in so many ways. Mountain bike tip for the week.
Just to kick in on, if I can, before you, other thing on Strava, and I think we could do like a whole episode on Strava, really.
Oh, definitely.
The community, and we've met people through Strava. We met people and said, are you on Strava, and connected with them that way. We've gotten rides in new places because of Strava. Like, hey, what's it like riding here? Oh, I'll give you a tour. So I think the social aspect of Strava for me is the coolest part.
Yeah. So, that's a good point about the community. Yes. Which has nothing to do with mountain biking, but because I train outdoors, one of the most important pieces of equipment that I have are fenders. And I did a review on these fenders that I'm going to bring up, but it's the SKS fenders. My goodness, if you are riding outdoors on a road bike, you're dealing with mud, you're dealing with salt, you're dealing with all kinds of conditions. And these fenders really just, they save the day, you know, because the worst thing that can happen is you can get wet on your road bike and you're just freezing. Yeah, I mean, not only do you look silly because then you have that like racing stripe on your back, but like that rooster tail, you know, the racing stripe.
Yeah.
But staying dry is so important. And so if you have the money and you're interested in doing outdoor training, definitely invest in some fenders. You know, the ones that I recommend are the SKS fenders, but you can honestly get whatever fenders you want. But yeah, that's my mountain bike trail stage.
You did a trail stage video on those, didn't you?
Yeah.
So you can, so if you're interested in, if you're doing outdoor workouts or interested in doing outdoor workouts on your road bike or your gravel bike, then check out Trail Stage. Just go into Trail Stage and search for the Fender SKS Fender review, and you can get some more information on the fenders that he recommends. And what about mountain bike fender? I mean, is that an important thing to have?
They make mountain bike fenders too. I'm not sure how useful that would be, but certainly having a front fender makes a lot of sense, because you know, having debris come up into your face is pretty annoying. I don't actually use a fender, but I know plenty of people that do run a front fender, not a back fender, but just a front fender. But
some of the new Fox forks like come with a fender or have a fender that you can install directly in, like it's designed for it. It's pretty cool. Yeah. It's nothing. There's few things more frustrating than wearing a pair of sunglasses and being out in the muck, or a pair of glasses, riding glasses, and then because the spray from the front bike is actually shooting it into the glasses.
Yeah.
So it's completely useless. So I do like that front fender. Fenders. That's a good tip. So, well, we still have a lot more to touch on in mountain bike fitness. We have to get into recovery. We have to get into strength. We have to get into technique. And we will do that in a very soon and upcoming pod. Let us know how interested you are. Ride in one. Cut. RideInLaugh1@gmail.com. I've only said it like 12 dozen times today. Can you just overlay one of those other times that I said it where I didn't mess it up? Yeah. If you're watching on YouTube, my mouth will go one direction and I'll say something else. Or you can just say it. You can just be like, right and left one.
Yeah. Wow.
All right. Everyone, you know at this point, right and left one at Gmail. You should have already written us. You should be writing right now. Stop the car. Get your phone out. Write us a message. Tell us what you want to learn about fitness. Tell us what you're doing for fitness. Tell us what you're interested in. We're going to get into recovery. That's a really big one. We're also going to get into strength, which I think is super, super important and makes your mountain biking better, makes your life better. If you're still listening, you're absolutely one of us. You're a mountain biker. You love riding bikes. We are stoked to have you. Thank you very much. Rate and subscribe us. Subscribe on your podcast player. Rate and like us on YouTube. Email. Throw us a comment. Join the community. We appreciate you. Ride and laugh. Have a great week, everybody.
I'll see everyone.